The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Trouble. Scott Farrell is calling the shots from the sideline. We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings. It's Farrell on the bench. I believe in whipped cream with everything. It's Farrell on the bench in the biggest way possible. Hanging out. A bad seed, a broken day, a bad apple with a bad attitude. Hanging around a bunch of bad others, bad taste, bad law, bad dude, bad breath, bad attention, bad vibes. We are live in the Farrell Palatial right across the river and through the woods from where Granny loves to drink Tito's and water. In New York City, the Big Apple. Ooh. People dressed in plastic bags, directed to Travis, some kind of fashion, shake it up, should do, but all my friends that come around, flats and party up, rats on the west side, bed bugs uptown, what a mess, this town's a tatter, my brain's splattered all over Manhattan, should do, be shake out. Ooh. Hey, what's gigging? It's Farrell with Carver High tonight. So, right now, tied at 50s, four and change left in the first half between the Thunder and Rockets in Game 7. And another Gallinari 3 puts the Thunder up 3. So, we've already had a wild finish to the Bucks Heat game. Of course, Miami won it. They're up 2-0 in the series. And I just couldn't even believe the end of that game, to be honest with you. I can't even describe it to you. My feeling is the guy pulls up from the deep corner, no time left at all. I got a problem with the call. The guy got the shot off. He missed it. It was after the fact that he, I guess, ran into him. What would you call it, Carver High? His body touched him or something?
I think he put his hand on his left side, and that was it.
Hand on his left side. I just saw him kind of hand on him.
That was it. I thought it was a weak call too.
But you thought I thought he bumped into him after the fact, like after he had shot and missed it, he ran into him, and they called that. So my feeling is, it's the same as always with me. The refs in the NBA ruin everything. They're terrible. I hear about all the time. They're the greatest refs in the world, and I say, screw that. I just do not agree with that call. I don't know where they find these people. We'll talk more about it on the bench.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table. With, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
All right, Perel on the bench. I'll get into the terrible NBA refs, in my opinion, later. It's very important, though, that we hang out with our buddy Gilbert Manzano with the Orange County Register out in OC, Lipstick City-ish, my old stomping grounds, Huntington Beach. I got my I don't know if you can see me right now on TV, but I got my Surf City Pier shirt on same night I'm talking to Gilbert. What's up, G?
Hey, how's it going? It's good to be back on your show.
My man. So it's good to hear your voice. Thanks for coming on tonight. So I got a lot I want to talk to you about. I want to kind of start off, though, with, frankly, the situation with Derwin James, right? So obviously this is, in my opinion, it's a big blow to them because, you know, one day they were talking about he had a knee problem and you know, that he was going to miss practice a little bit and this and that. And then the next thing I know, he's having surgery. And the next thing I know, he's finished. Like, he's 8 months. Like, is that all about accurate? Like, how it kind of played out? You tell me.
Yeah, you know what? It was, you know, kind of a long process, like a long timeline. But you kind of knew where, you know, where this was headed. You knew it was going to be, I guess you didn't know exactly, but you had a sense it's going to be season-ending injury. And the Chargers didn't announce it until this morning, today, when they had an official, you know, statement saying he's going to be out for the rest of the season. Successful surgery. He'll be ready to go for 2021. He's going to be placed on IR. So that's when you kind of knew that was it for Derwin James. But, you know, I was there Sunday when it played out. I didn't really see, you know, how he took the hit or how what occurred for the injury. But I saw him on the ground. You could tell right away it was bad. He was down there for a little bit, and when he got up, that's when you could tell. A guy who never really lets his emotions get the best of him, he was pretty angry about it. He threw his gloves, you know, before entering the medical tent. So that's when you know. When you see a player, you know, that frustrated, that's when you kind of know that could be kind of a serious injury. But overall, a brutal blow for the Chargers, for the NFL as a whole. Very talented player. I was excited to watch him come back healthy after kind of a down year a year ago with the foot injury. He looked like he was great and good in shape for his training camp. And now he has to wait again for another year. So mentally, it's a brutal blow for Derwin James. But he's a very strong-minded guy, so I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, I know. You know, Anthony Lynn talked about him and talked about how the guy's incredible. He's got this amazing mind, body, dementia going. He's got, you know, he does everything right. The way he goes about his business, he's a good guy. He said everything about him. He's respectful. He's good to people. He's a good teammate. He's important in the community. A leader. I mean, everything you could come up with. And then he talked about his frustration. Now, listen. The reality of it is, G, that he's. This is 2 years now in a row that this super ultra talented player is being shut down with injuries. At what point does it become, I mean, it's seriously a problem now. Like, this guy's missing two seasons. Like, his the prime of his career, he's been blown out twice in a row now.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's kind of hard to think about that now, you know, after the injury that occurred, but you're right. At some point, you got to come with a decision because he's in his third year. He was a first round pick. I think he was number 17 overall in 2018. So usually after 3 years, you got to decide if you want to pick up that fifth year option. And usually that fifth year option is, it's a big chunk of change. So you got to make a big commitment to keep a guy like that, a first round guy. But I just think, you know, everything he did in that 2018 season, he was an all pro as a rookie at two different positions, defensive back and safety. Not too many guys could say that. Just to say they were all pro, even a pro bowler as a rookie, that went a long way. And then from that point on, he kind of already established that he was probably one of the best, if not the best, safeties in the game. And you kind of throw in all the good character stuff off the field, a leader. I think he was on pace to be a team captain at age 24 or 23. I forget how young he is, but that's how much Anthony Lynn likes this guy. And Anthony Lynn is one of those guys that he could sniff you out. If you're a leader, he's going to count on you. And he's one of those guys that has a high bar for leadership. So I think you kind of put that into play also. But you're right. When you think about, you know, potentially missing 27 games out of 32 of the last two seasons, that's kind of a big thing to kind of, you know, wrap your mind around it. But I think sometimes you got to bank on talent, being so young. Even if you look at the Chargers' own locker room, a guy like Keenan Allen, who tore his ACL week one of the 2016 season against the Chiefs, comes back from that and he makes three straight Pro Bowls. He's getting, you know, 100 catches a year, 1,000 receiving yards a year. Or even a guy like Melvin Ingram, same kind of problems early on. Now he's a three-time Pro Bowler. So you don't have to look too far to kind of see stories of guys kind of coming back. And just the rough part for the Chargers, they have this injury bug, it seems like, year after year, and they just can't shake it. So it kind of feels like, here we go again. But I think with Derwin James, they're willing to roll the dice for him.
Well, I mean, injury bug, bad luck, whatever you want to call it, it's more than that even. It's their best player. I mean, he's the best player on the team. Now, listen, Gus Bradley's got to really, you know, I guess, start moving chess pieces, right? Like, so he's got this defense, you know, they were stacked, in my opinion, going into it. You're talking about a guy that had, you know, since the start of 2018, there's only a few guys in the league that have 130 tackles, three sacks, three picks. It's crazy. And those guys are like, you know, Tyrann Mathieu, et cetera, Harrison Smith, Jordan Poyer. Bottom line is, the guy's a stud. You lose him. What do you think the plan is? I've heard Jenkins returning to strong safety. What do you know about, like, the plan to shift pieces? They obviously have to do some maneuvering.
Yeah, you know what? It just feels very similar to a year ago when they lost Derwin James. But I don't want to call it a good thing. But now that you kind of know what life is without Derwin James, I think that's why they went out to get a guy like Chris Harris Jr. And it's kind of a weird situation. You get a guy like Chris Harris Jr., you draft another safety in Alohi Gilman, you have Nazir Ali back out there, and then you start wondering, how are all these pieces going to fit together? Is some guy going to get left out? And for like many months, Anthony Lynn was asked, who fits where? And then now it's kind of like, well, this is why they added depth, because injuries happen. You got to be ready for all scenarios, and they'll figure out the positions and the roles later on. Now that they're kind of backed up with that, there are different combinations they could do, and it's a whole lot of guys. But you brought up Rayshon Jenkins possibly moving a strong safety. I think he's the lead guy. I think they really like what he's done as a kind of a two-way safety. He was a free safety a year ago, but he came into the league as a strong safety. Now it kind of opens up the door for Nazir Adderley, who I just wrote about him today. And it's wild to think that people are comparing him to Earl Thomas a year ago coming out of the draft in Delaware. And now Earl Thomas is actually available as a free agent. But I think they're going to, you know, roll the dice on Adderley, a second-year guy who was healthy. So much potential a year ago, but he had the bad hamstring that kind of set up, you know, it derailed his rookie season. He never really got going a year ago. You also have another former All-Pro in Desmond King. People forget that he was a slot cornerback, 2018 All-Pro. But he can also play safety also. I know the Chargers have been kind of mixing and matching. And I think Gus Bradley called it cross-training. So they've been ready with these guys for these scenarios, especially after a year ago, and just kind of just being the Chargers. They know what injuries, how they could derail your season. So they've been ready for all that. Obviously, you can't really replace Derwin James, but I think it feels like they're better off this year, especially with everything you have up top with Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. You draft a guy like Kenneth Murray. You bring in a guy like Linval Joseph. Drew Tranquil seemed to be like a gem from a year ago. So you have a lot of guys now to at least kind of help you out with the secondary.
So Gilman, how much time, Carver High, just so I'm clear, because we're going to do another segment with Gilbert. All right, so let me just say, because in about 30 seconds, because Gilman was undrafted, right? Like, and he's turned into a player. That's a nice snag for them, a guy that they never even had a clue he'd turn into a player.
He was actually drafted, but he was a late guy in the sixth round. And it was kind of a head scratcher because the Chargers needed a lineman. and they went out and got another DB. So that kind of tells you right there how much you think about him.
All right, so we'll come back. I want to talk about the other side of the ball, and because we're on in all of Southern California and San Diego on Mightier 1090, I want to discuss what the feeling is about the Chargers in Lipstick City as opposed to the fans that are mad in San Diego.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're tied to Gilbert Manzano, the Orange County Register out in Cali. So before I leave the defense, Ingram and Bosa together, can they do enough damage now that it seems like Ingram's finally happy with the contract, I guess. Can they do enough damage, in the pocket, at the quarterback, up front, to make us not notice what's going on in the secondary with that defense? Because I thought with that defense whole, they were dangerous. And now that there's some leaks in the ship, I got to have other people step up. We talked about the names and all these other guys, King, et cetera, that can – step in and do a job, but I don't think they're going to be as good as James. So what can they do with that type of, damage control pass rush? Those guys are evil.
Yeah, you kind of thought a year ago they were going to, maybe at least help out with filling the void of Derwin James. You create the push up front with those two Pro Bowl edge rushers and Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa, maybe you'll be okay. You put a lot of pressure on the quarterback, so maybe the secondary doesn't get out of work. That didn't really happen a year ago, and it was kind of a head scratcher when you have two guys that talented. And I think they're at the bottom in recording sacks. I think they got about 30 sacks a year ago, and I think Joey Bosa got almost half of those by himself. So it was kind of a one-man team a year ago, maybe a little bit of a down year for Melvin Ingram. But kind of the issue a year ago was, creating the push in the interior of the defensive line. They didn't really get too much from the defensive tackles. Now you're bringing a big guy like Linval Joseph. It's kind of funny. Sometimes you try to figure out what reviews are true and which ones are not, or kind of hype during training camp. But every time you ask somebody about Linval Joseph, it seems like their eyes light up or their ears perk up for the Chargers, and they just have all these crazy adjectives for Linval Joseph. If he's still the same guy that he was in Minnesota, I think it's going to help out, the two big guys on the outside. And then I mentioned Kenneth Murray before the break. I think Kenneth Murray is going to be a big addition to the Chargers defense. You got pretty much no play or I guess no production from the linebackers a year ago. That, we talk about all the talent on this defense. They were last in takeaways. They only had 14 takeaways a year ago. And I know they didn't have Derwin James for 11 games, so that's kind of unacceptable for that type of talent you have with Gus Bradley. But I think Tranquil, a year or two, and Murray will help out at least creating some push, with the front seven. Those guys are very versatile. And we mentioned Gus Bradley. I think a year ago, Anthony Lynn wasn't happy with those numbers, the takeaways, in the sack. So they're going to probably, call the blitz more heavy. I know he's one of the worst or one of the bottoms when it comes to, dying up the blitzes for Gus Bradley. But I think this year they're going to really go at it at the opposing quarterback.
So how much on that in the trenches up front offensively, they get Beluga. That's a big add for them. And then obviously what Turner's going to do on the right side. How do you think the rest of them are going to do? Tevi, et cetera, up front. Do they have, because their rushing game, let's face facts, was terrible last year.
Yeah, I think that's the one that concerns me, the offensive line. You mentioned Bulaga and Turner. They have Mike Pouncey back. you know, you look at that right side, they're pretty well off. But then you mentioned Tevi and the guys on the other side, Dan Feeney. It's a very inexperienced left side. You know, before the Derwin James injury, you looked at the roster and you thought this is a pretty good roster. And then you kind of looked at that left side, like who's going to be the blindside guy? Who's going to be the left tackle? Sam Tevi was, you know, he struggled as on the right side. But they got Brian Bulaga to kind of help out. But then you kind of shift the problem to the other side. So I don't know how you solve anything there. But so far, Anthony Lynn's been pleased with Sam Tevi and what he's done. I know they have Trey Pipkins, the third-round pick from a year ago from Sioux Falls. I don't know if they feel he's ready to start, but they kind of like his potential. So it could be a kind of a back-and-forth, you know, rotation between Sam Tevi and Trey Pipkins on the left side. I know people always wonder about Forrest Lamp. He was a second-round pick in 2017, you know, very highly rated. Will he finally, you know, start at left guard and be healthy and ready to go heading into the final year of his rookie contract? It doesn't seem that way. It seems going to be the backup. I think Dan Feeney, I know he has his ups and downs. He's inconsistent at times, but something about what he does, just the coaching staff really likes, and he's been starting every game the past 2 years, so you're going to see Dan Feeney back in there. But the good thing for the Chargers, it's not Philip Rivers anymore. It's not a statue back there. You know, a very accurate quarterback. But when it came to doing you know, these bootlegs and RPOs, he couldn't do it. Now you have Tyrod Taylor, who's very mobile, and possibly Justin Herbert. So you kind of have the pocket crashing. You at least know you have some guys who could escape. But you would like to see a clean pocket, you know, for most of the season.
There's no doubt. Now, what's the deal, G, with Mike Williams' shoulder? Is he all right? Is it a labrum? What is it? Because he's a badass, and if they don't have Allen and Williams on the field, I know they got this kid Reed. I think they're going to use him more, isolated, and then special teams, running back kicks and such. Am I crazy? But what's the story with Williams and the plan if he's banged up?
Yeah, there is a lot more hope in Mike Williams than what happened with Derwin James. When the injury first happened with Mike Williams, there was concern that could be, you know, a first month of the season kind of injury. It could be out 4 games or even 6 games. To being optimistic, there were some reports of being of 2 weeks. I just sounded far fetched for Mike Williams. The way he was in pain, you got to see it on Hard Knocks yesterday. And he was in pain for a few minutes, so it just didn't look good. But this week, he's been out there, you know, stretching, at least, you know, doing some sprints. I know it's a shoulder injury, so you could run and stretch out. But just to be out there and feel okay to kind of work with your teammates for – it's not technically a practice, but just to be out there and kind of get your body going. And then Anthony Lynn, there was a kind of like a hidden quote a couple of days ago where somebody asked about the wide receivers, and he kind of just threw in, yeah, hopefully we have Mike Williams before week one. That kind of makes me feel like, you know, they have, you know, good amount of hope that he's going to be, you know, back for the season opener. And you kind of need Mike Williams because, you know, we speak about the depth on the defense. But when it comes to the offense, there's not a lot of depth maybe besides running back. Wide receivers is very top heavy. Yeah, Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. And after that, a bunch of new guys. You mentioned Joe Reed, where people are very high on. And I think he will be good in the long run. But it just seems like he's not ready there as a wide receiver. They might use him as a kickoff guy. They might use him as a trick guy as a running back in the backfield. But as a wide receiver, he hasn't really kind of figured out yet just from watching training camp. The guy that I have been impressed about is KJ Hill from Ohio State, the seventh-round pick. The only problem, he's kind of a route guy like Keenan Allen, so you kind of already have that. And they're pretty much dead set on looking for speed. And when it comes to the speed competition, there's a bunch of guys that I'm sure a lot of people have never really heard of. The guy who's kind of like in the prime position is Jalen Guyton, because he has the speed, but he hasn't really done too much on the field, and people don't really know the name. But overall, you got to have Mike Williams on the field because it's a very thin wide receiver group.
I love him. I think he's a great player. So Gilbert Manzano with us from the OC Reg. Do you care at all? I mean, seriously, about how they have to deal. Like, I don't think they care anymore. I'll be honest with you. I don't think they worry about the fans in San Diego, but I still think it sucks they left San Diego. And I think, I just don't like that move. I understand the city. I've been told by everyone that I know said the city screwed it up. It wasn't Spanos. It was the city, that they played games with them for, you know, 15 years, and then they left and they went to Lipstick City to play. what's the venom like? Does anyone care at all that there's so many people that hate him for what they did? Or have they just completely shed it, moved on, and don't care what anyone thinks?
You know, when I first got onto the beat about almost 3 years ago, I kind of felt the tension on social media. Anytime I posted about about the Chargers on Twitter, you kind of got that San Diego fan base just kind of, you know, attacking me like I'm the one that took the team, or just kind of fighting with other fans from LA, and they're kind of going at it in the comments. but now it's kind of died down a little bit. I think once Philip Rivers, I don't know if it's like a thing for LA, but once Philip Rivers went to the Colts, it kind of just took the last, I guess, the last part of San Diego when he left. And I think now it's kind of like San Diego doesn't really care about them too much. And now the Chargers are more into moving forward with the whole LA era and building, you know, from here, from LA. You know, it's still going to be a long progress to kind of get fans, you know, in the stadium. Luckily, I guess, not, I don't know about luckily, but they won't have that challenge this year of trying to fill a new stadium of 70,000 seats. But you kind of feel like that breakup after a couple of years of some time, reflection, and healing, they're kind of moving on. But I know the San Diego fan base and Dean Spanos and the family there and the ownership, they don't really get along. So anytime I post about Dean Spanos, that's when kind of the rage comes back a little bit. But it's a little less now for LA.
You know, it's weird because I think that, believe it or not, I believe that if they win, they'll fill up that SoFi. I don't care what anybody says. It's the same with any team, anywhere, any sport. It does not matter. If you suck, no one goes. If you win, they come out like cockroaches. I mean, they will be there guaranteed. If the Chargers are winning and they got a playoff caliber team in the hunt, I can guarantee you they'll go to that new multi-billion dollar Shangri-La stadium they're going to play in. Hey, G, always good catching up. I love you, Gilbert. We'll catch up throughout the season and talk Charger football with you. Thanks for coming on the bench, as always. We'll get you on the TV side one of these days, too, for sure. All right, bro?
Oh, that'd be great, Scott. Thank you for the time, as always, man.
All right, my man. Gilbert Manzano, great writer, covers the Chargers for the OC Reg. Great paper. I used to get it delivered to my crib every day when I lived in HB. We always love hooking up with G to talk a little Charger football. So just so we're on top of things here, the Avalanche are going to win that game. In fact, they probably already have. It was 4-1 when I turned it off. 4-1 final. So, you know, now, because I thought Dallas could get it done tonight, so I'm done with them. I'm done with them. They're done. They're going to lose game 7. You know that, Carver High. Because that, I mean, they've been getting their ass beat now. That's 9 goals in 2 games. So they're going to win game 7, Colorado. And they're going to give us what we always wanted, Colorado and Vegas, because Vegas is going to win tomorrow night. That'll be the end of that. And then right now we're starting up the second half, Rockets 63-59 on the Thunder. Anyway, we're just talking bad about people here in between segments. We try to get that out of the way when we're not on air. When we're on air, we're as pleasant as ever. Anyway, I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. Anyway, so it's 68-62 Rockets. Can I go back to this other game for a minute, Carver High, and talk about how much
We have to really talk. Now we can get into it. We have to talk about the end of this first game because it was just... I thought both fouls were embarrassing. The foul on Middleton on the 3 and the foul on Butler at the end. I thought both fouls were awful.
All right, so you didn't think the foul on Middleton was a foul?
I thought that it was a weak foul in that spot. I thought that that's a foul you call, you know, in the middle of the second quarter. I know you probably...
What
know,
happened? Just, I missed it. I missed just that foul. I saw the end of the game. I missed that foul because you were the one that told me that he got 3 free throws. I said he's got to make 3 free throws. He'll probably miss one, but he made all 3, and it was 114 apiece. And then all hell broke loose. We'll talk about that in a second. But tell me about the foul. What was it, a chop to the legs? Did he go underneath him? What was it?
Yeah, I mean, he kind of leaned into him a little bit. He took like a 3 from out in the – you know, in the left corner out there, and that was when it was 114, 111. And did he get into him? I mean, a little bit, but I thought it was very, it was a weak. It was weak.
He induced
him. Yeah, yeah. He kind of leaned a little bit, Middleton. I thought that he leaned into the guy a little. You know, that's what I thought he did.
So it's the same thing Harden does all the time. He gets you up in the air, then he leans in and gets fouled and shoots it.
Right, exactly.
Okay, well, that fair enough. Okay, so let's just say hypothetically that was a bad call, but he made all three and they went to 114 apiece. But the end of the game, with no time left, they throw it to Butler in the corner, deep corner, like beyond the line, where there's not one inch of space, the deepest corner. My favorite shot in basketball is that deep corner. I can hit that deep corner three like nobody's business, right? So he's standing down there with basically a double on him, right? He's got two guys on him, and the one guy is Giannis, and he jumps up with a body in his face, and then Giannis off to the side of him, kind of coming at him. They were both going at him, and he shot it, and he missed it flush, right, off the rim, clank. But Giannis ran into him, barely. I mean, I guess you could say, well, he definitely hit him. But it was well after the shot. And I thought that, you know, my feeling is in a game that tight, in a game that close, in a game that's 114 all, you've got to, in my opinion, and I know people won't agree with this, but I don't care. You got to let him go to overtime. You just can't call the foul there. You cannot let a guy in the NBA that makes that much money go to the line having to make one free throw to end the game out of two, because he's going to make one of them. I can guarantee he's going to make one. The first one was a crappy free throw, and he still made it, right? It rolled around, it hit the backboard, rolled back around, and went in. That was it. Game over. There's no point in even shooting the second one. Right? That was it. There was no time left. Why did they make him shoot two? It was embarrassing. Bottom line is, the ref decided the game. Not the players. Not Butler. Not anybody. Not Giannis. Not anybody. The ref became the story. That's what I have a problem with. The ref should never be the story. It should be players. Players make plays. Refs ref and shut up. Refs ruin everything. It is no different, in my opinion. Now, people can say whatever they want. Oh, he's crying about the refs. I don't have – I hate the Bucks, and I like the – you know, I like the Heat. I've always liked the Heat. I lived in Miami. I've always rooted for them. It's been, you know, something I've been completely transparent about. Carver High, God is my witness. You know it's true. I've been to a million Heat games in Miami. I like them. I liked them long before LeBron was there, right? So you'd think I'd be happy because I bet on the Heat in game one to win outright, right? You'd think I'd be happy. I bet on the Bucks tonight, but that's neither here nor there. This is that was about betting, not about favorites or anything like that, or choosing sides or anything like that. This is about you cannot let refs decide games. You know what I mean? Players should decide games. Like, you know, Conley's shot last night for the Jazz. That decided the game, not some ref. The ref made the call. It was a weak call. After he missed the J, he wasn't making that J. That foul had nothing to do with him missing that shot. You know it. It had nothing to do with it. That's like a leg kick foul. You know, the guy that kicks his leg out to get contact. I am telling you, there is no worse way to end a game two of an Eastern, an Eastern semi, to let that be the end of the game. Let's blow a whistle when there's no time left. Game over. They're going to overtime. No, they're not. We're going to let a guy go to the line, and all he has to do is make one. Game over. I mean, you got it. That's just a load of BS is what that is. Inject swearing here. Inject swearing here. That's what that is. Refs controlling it. Refs ruining it. And then I just can't take these refs, like these stoppages and these reviews and these, you know, the ref now comes out of the window, taps the mic and starts telling the broadcasters what his call is. It's so embarrassing. The NFL is even worse because the NFL, they're all 90 years old. and they can't keep up with the play, and they make calls from 40 yards away. Like the guy that throws the flag, he's 35 yards from the play, but he's making a call, throwing the flag like it's got rocks tied to it. He throws it through the air. The thing sails through the air like a paper airplane, right? So, and then they throw a flag on every play in the NFL. What game do you watch that there's not 50 flags? What game do you watch that every big play you watch anymore in the NFL, every big play, touchdown, bombs, runs, kickoff returns, it doesn't matter what it is. If there's a touchdown, what's the first thing you think of? Touchdown? No. No, it's not. You don't think, oh my God, my team just scored a touchdown, a 75-yard kickoff return. The first thing I think of on every touchdown in the NFL now is a flag and the review. They don't even just give touchdowns anymore. They have a system of flags and reviews they got to go through. It takes 4 hours to play a game, sometimes longer. You know why? Because of the refs. The refs take forever. And here's another one. The refs, there's so many refs on a football field now, I can't even find players. I can't even find the guys playing. There's so many G-damn refs. I mean, honestly, they're everywhere. They're like mosquitoes. And these refs in the NBA, Christ almighty, it started with Donaghy, with the corrupt refs. Don't think for 1 minute I don't think there's corrupt refs and that they are on the take and that they're completely insane. Like they have favorites. They play favorites. Like if a guy gets lit up by a player, you don't think he holds a grudge? You don't think he like gets even with the player and makes calls all night against him? It happens every night. These guys are so short-tempered. If you wave your arms at him, it's an automatic tech. Like if you give him a, you're terrible. You can't even cuss at him. If you just go like this, you got to be kidding me. If you do that, like if you're watching me on YouTube and you just throw your arms, that's a tech. The coaches can't even talk to him anymore. That's a tech. If they cuss at him, first they'll tech him up for even questioning him. Then they tech him up when they swear, they throw him out of the game. You cannot let a game of that magnitude be decided by a crappy ref call. That's my opinion of it. And I like the Heat. I should be happy that they won. No, I'm not happy because I think the game would have been better. It would have been a better ending if they would have played another 5 minutes of overtime. What kind of person gets off on watching a guy shoot a free throw to win the game after the game just ended when he shot a brick from the corner? Because Butler didn't do anything in the game. And then he gets credit for winning the game. Did you see after the game the credit they gave him? Like he had just found Jesus.
And he was seconds away, let's be fair, seconds away from being the absolute GOAT of this game. Because the Heat, Scotty, let's be fair, they dominated pretty much the entire game. They were the better team for the entire game. They had a 6-point lead with 20 seconds left in the game. Giannis makes a dunk. They get down by 4. And then Butler throws the ball away. Lopez lays it in. Now it's a 2-point game. They foul Butler. He misses one of the free throws that made it a 3-point game. And that allowed then Middleton to go down and tie it when he got fouled. So Butler threw the ball away with 15 seconds left. Then he missed a free throw with 7 seconds left. And he ends up being the hero because he got that foul call with no time left. So Butler was almost the GOAT in this game.
Here you go, Jimmy. Don't need to score 40. Here's the story. Like, it never ends. It's like, here you go. Earlier, it was, Giannis devastated. He beat the Bucks. And I already sent you stories. Jimmy Butler makes free throw to ice game two. Like, are you kidding me? How pathetic is that for a headline or some kind of story or recap of a game two of an Eastern semi? The whole thing comes down to him standing by himself at the free throw line like he was shooting a technical foul. No players on the court. They made him go to the line, I guess what, to put pressure on him? Are you kidding me? I could make one of two drunk and high. That's how easy that is. And trust me, I made 164 free throws in a row in my driveway. God is my witness. I can shoot free throws completely baked all day. I mean all day. I can hit so many free throws, make your head spin. So here's the deal. No guy with Jimmy Butler's talent is missing both of those free throws. He would have buckled down if he missed the first one and made the second, as sure as I'm sitting here. He's not some big 7 foot center galoof that's going to shank it off the back of the rim. Jimmy Butler's a pure scorer. Pure scorers don't miss two free throws when they have to make them. And you know why he got to go to the line? Because the refs ruined it. The refs ruined the game. Congratulations. Nice job, Pinstripe, you fat ass. Honestly, like, I can't tell you how disappointed I was. I'm sitting there watching the game, and I go, what a crappy way to end the game. We got to watch this guy go shoot free. What was worse, that they let him go shoot free throws? They made him shoot both of them. What was the point of the second when the first one, the game was over? There was no time left. The game ended on the first free throw. Am I high? Or did they let him, they made him shoot two? What was that for? Is that for the record books? What was that for? Confirmation? Was that for the church? What was it for? You tell me, Carver High. Why did he shoot both of them?
Well, that's bookkeeping. It's a two-shot foul. It doesn't matter how much time is left. And let's be fair here. There's probably guys. Now, I don't know what the second half line was or what the listen, I'm saying some people get live lines. You don't know what's going on with bets that people have. For some people, that extra free throw maybe made a difference in something.
Unbelievable. That is so unbelievable to me. Honestly, that is unbelievable. Unbelievable. I just saw this guy Dort block Austin Rivers on a breakaway layup. A breakaway dunk. He blocked his shot like the greatest defensive play since LeBron James in the finals with that slap against the backboard. He just swatted Austin Rivers from behind, and he was literally 5-10 feet behind him when he started chasing him up the court. He caught him and swatted him into oblivion. Oh, but House just missed a dunk, too. You got to make that dunk. I mean, they have shut Chris Paul down in this game. He's only got 9. He's 2 of 6 from the floor. But he's got 8 rebounds and 10 dimes. So he's almost at a triple-double if he could just get a couple rebounds and another point. The star is Dort. I talked about him today on Coast to Coast. He's got 23 right now. And on the other side, they've held Harden to 12. And I mean, that's all there is to it, right? Westbrook's got 14, Covington 14, Gordon's got 19, and Green's got 10. That's about it, right? The Rockets are shooting 35% from downtown. The Thunder 52% from downtown and 51% in the game from the floor. That's why they're in the game. They're down 2. Harden, 2 of 11 from the floor. He's just had a terrible game, right? Meanwhile, they're winning. So what happened on the Austin Rivers breakaway that I thought Dort blocked him from behind, he caught him from behind. It obviously flustered him having a guy chasing him down. But he went up to dunk it, and he actually hit the ball on the rim and missed the dunk. He never got blocked by Dort. Dort never touched the ball. It just looked like with the naked eye that he had blocked the shot, but he didn't. It was Austin Rivers actually missing the dunk. He hit the ball on the rim, and it you know, he just flat out missed. So that was why there was no call, because he never touched him. So that was a good no call, because it looked like, you know, he fouled him, but he never touched him or the ball. And then they went down again, and House had this massive look to go crank a dunk from off of the wing. He got his defender up, came in from the wing to dunk uncontested, flying through the air with a thunder jam, and he missed it off the back of the rim and just shank Apotamus, and they called the foul, and he went to the line. So now the Rockets are up 3, and you're talking about still 2:40 left in the third, so there's plenty of game left. They're in it because they're shooting well from the floor and from 3.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.